Welcome to Jury Duty. I'm your host, Chris Terracone. For season 10 of this Jury Duty podcast, we are presenting the trial of Robert Durst, Greatest Hits. During each of the 6 weeks of the Jinx 2 series, we are re-releasing 4 of our favorite episodes about the Durst trial from the Jury Duty feed, for a total of 24 episodes. In installment 9, we offer highlights of season 1, episodes 9 through 12, the defense opening and the pandemic hiatus. Dick DeGaren and David Chesnoff split the responsibilities of delivering the defense opening, with DeGaren asserting that Durst didn't kill Susan Berman, and he doesn't know who did, and with Chesnoff reminding the jurors that the defendant is only on trial for Berman's murder. After the opening statements conclude, it becomes clear that the jury will have to choose between two ways of interpreting evidence. Will they be guided by Chesnoff's mantra that, quote, no evidence is evidence, deciding that the lack of CSI-type forensic evidence leaves them with reasonable doubt of Durst's guilt? Or will they follow Lewin's OK Boomer method, deciding that the mess of circumstantial evidence surrounding Durst's actions and statements, and the statements of others, leaves only one reasonable explanation, that Robert Durst killed Susan Berman? And then, after 2 days of testimony, the LA courts are shut down due to COVID-19, and the trial is suspended until next spring. The episode concludes with a taste of the testimony that lies ahead in season 2. That's all coming up right after the break.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
We've been representing Bob since, well, I first met him in the jail in Pennsylvania in November of 2001, right after he'd been arrested. Rather spectacular, shoplifting a chicken salad sandwich, a Wall Street Journal, and a Band-Aid. Bob Durst did not kill Susan Berman, and he doesn't know who did. He did find her body shortly after someone had shot her in the back of the head. He was coming to visit her when Bob showed up and found her dead. He panicked. He wrote the anonymous letter so her body would be found, and he ran. He's run away all his life. I want to talk about the elephant in the room, Bob's dismemberment of Morris Blackwell. Bob spent hours and hours dismembering Morris Black's body. Let's talk about separating that evidence from the evidence, whatever it is, about Susan Berman's death, because that's what really is before you. That's the only thing you can decide. Bob fully accepted responsibility for dismembering Kathy Durst, for dismembering Morris Black's body.
It's just a slip of the tongue, but unlike his earlier missteps, it lands like an anvil in the courtroom. Dick DeGaren said Bob accepted responsibility for dismembering Kathy Durst.
Bob doesn't make good decisions. It's part of his makeup. There's two sides to the story. Bob Durst is going to testify. Okay, let's talk about the dismemberment. The elephant in the room. He saw it across the thigh bones and the arm bones. Instead of cutting around the joints, as you would if you were going to cut up a chicken to cook it, or if you have turkey for Thanksgiving and you carve that turkey, you always go around the joints. It was unplanned. That's what we think the evidence will show to you. It was unplanned. It was spur of the moment. And again, he ran. And he was arrested again, shoplifting a chicken salad sandwich. with $400 in his pocket. What he wanted to do was kill himself rather than be arrested. He had decided that he was going to kill himself, and he had talked to Debbie about it. He even had a plot to kill himself in Douglas's driveway. So he's put in jail. He called his lawyers late that evening. He's put in the Orleans Parish Prison, a place that's worse than the L.A. County Jail. We believe the evidence will show it wasn't a confession at all. It was Bob trying to play them.
Well, you asked me what I thought you wanted to hear. I think what you wanted to hear is, what did you do with Kathy?
Right.
And I think you want me to go through details of Susan.
I do.
Okay, so now, if I tell you those things, I'm pleading guilty, I'm going to be going back to Los Angeles, to California, and doing my time.
There is no evidence. Bob Durst did not kill Susan Berman, and he doesn't know who did.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, my name is David Chesnoff. It's important to remember that Bob is only charged with Susan Berman's murder. The evidence will show that this case is based on false memories, a profound misunderstanding of who Bob is, and a Hollywood production called The Jinx. Yes, Bob found the body of Susan Berman on December 23, 2000, and he notified police of her body as he wrote what the prosecution calls the cadaver note. No fingernail scrapings were done on Susan to identify a possible attacker. No evidence is evidence. No evidence is evidence. Yes, Bob found the body of Susan Berman on December 23, 2000, and he notified police of her body as he wrote what the prosecution calls the cadaver note. So if she's murdered on the 23rd, 19 days go by before the LAPD thinks it's worthwhile to go in with a criminalist and assign a criminalist to study who might have killed Susan Berman. People were traipsing through the crime scene. The prosecution is basically relying solely on witnesses who waited years to report alleged statements that Susan or Bob made. Actually, a lot of them, it was only until after they were aware of the jinx and other media. As you see, evidence will be presented which will support the suppressed memories can be altered. This case was wrapped in a bow by Jarecki and his Hollywood production. It led to a universal belief that Bob would never get a fair trial. But everybody over here knows that you people are going to consider evidence only. And if the evidence is not there, he stays innocent, and you will find him not guilty.
And with that, David Chesnoff closes his black binder filled with notes and returns to his swivel chair beside Robert Durst. The court TV screen displays a simple message. In white text over a black background, it reads, "Thank you for your time." Time is something that is undoubtedly on everyone's mind, from the jury to the judge to the attorneys to the defendant, Robert Durst. Susan Berman's alleged murder took place in December of 2000. It wasn't until 15 years later that Robert Durst was arrested in New Orleans after The Jinx aired on HBO. Discovery and pretrial hearings took over 4 years. Jury selection for Durst's trial began on February 19, 2020, with the trial commencing on March 4th. Now, after 4 days of opening statements, a process that typically takes less than a single day, it's evident to everyone why the trial is expected to last for 5 months.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
At least it was expected to last for 5 months. After 2 days of testimony, the LA courts were shut down due to COVID-19, and the trial was suspended. Due to the relentless spread of the pandemic in California, the trial faced numerous subsequent delays, placing the jurors' lives on hold while they waited for the trial to resume. On Friday, July 31st, the lawyers and the judge, wearing masks and observing social distance requirements, reconvened to determine the future of Robert Durst's trial. With California's reported COVID cases still climbing, Judge Mark E. Windham determined that another indefinite delay was untenable. A different course of action was required.
The people had proposed a new date of April 12th, and in moving papers, both sides agreed. Mr. Durst agreed in writing. I would say that both sides had made a good cause argument for the adjournment, so I'll treat it as a joint motion to adjourn until April 12th. But I would set an earlier date here in Department 81, 1 month ahead of that, just to be sure that we're on track and to assess the health conditions at the time.
The trial of Robert Durst has been adjourned until April 12th, 2021. At that time, the same jury will return to finish a trial that they started more than a year before. At the end of this episode, we will tell you more about our plans to cover these proceedings in the coming months. For now, based upon the 2 days of testimony that occurred before the trial was suspended, here is a taste of some of what lies ahead. On the first day of testimony, Robert Durst's brother, Thomas Durst, arrives in court, appearing frail, hobbling on a damaged leg, and wearing surgical gloves. At 70 years old, Thomas is the youngest of the Durst siblings. He resides in the California Bay Area, where he is a real estate developer and a philanthropist. From the moment that Thomas takes the stand, it's apparent that he's uncomfortable, itching in his own skin.
First of all, how do you feel about being here today?
I hate it.
Okay, and can you tell me why you're here?
I was subpoenaed.
And did you come voluntarily?
No, sir.
And did you do everything in your power to try and avoid coming here?
Times 10.
And can you tell me why is it that you don't want to be here today?
I'm humiliated to be here. This is a horrible experience. And I'm fearful of my brother.
As Thomas begins his testimony, his voice is soft and timid, with little inflection. He relates that he is not there voluntarily, but because he has been subpoenaed, and that he is terrified of his brother. Much of Thomas's testimony, guided by prosecutor John Lewin, is focused on establishing that his brother Robert was very controlling of Robert's wife, Kathy, during the time before her disappearance in late January 1982. Particularly when it came to money. Lewin asks Thomas about Robert's general attitude regarding his finances.
On a scale of 0 to 100, with 0 being the cheapest person you've ever met, and 100 being the most generous, based on your experience growing up and knowing your brother, how would you rate your brother?
I believe about minus 50, if the scale goes that low.
Thomas testifies that Robert, who has a net worth estimated to be over $100 million, gave his wife only food stamps to go shopping. And on one occasion, during a trip to a local market, Thomas gave Kathy Durst money to cover feminine hygiene products and other items not covered by the food stamps. On another occasion, in the weeks just before Kathy's disappearance, Kathy approached Thomas and begged him for financial assistance. Thomas refused to write Kathy a check for fear of Robert discovering that he had given her money. Instead, he gave her all of the cash he had on hand, maybe a few hundred dollars, as Thomas recalls. But in spite of Thomas's effort to conceal his gift to Kathy, Robert found out. During a trip taken by Thomas from his home in San Francisco to visit his family in New York in April of 1982, 3 months after Kathy Durst's disappearance, Robert confronted Thomas about the discovery before breakfast at Thomas's hotel.
As you know, Kathy was missing by that time. I use the term missing And Robert Durst came up to me, and these are the words he said. He said it, I know she asked you for money, but that's not the meaning that he put on it. He said it like this. I know she asked you for money!
The soft-spoken, frail man is now a raging fountain of venom. The jurors are visibly stunned by the outburst of emotion. All eyes are glued to Durst's little brother.
So the for the record, to capture, this is a very angry tone that the witness used when he stated those words. He should have shouted those words in an angry tone.
Mr. Durst, when he said that, how did you take that?
I felt like I was about to die.
As Deputy District Attorney Lewin continues the questioning, Thomas Durst reverts back to his soft-spoken tone and further recounts the events that day. When Lewin asks him, what's the next thing that happened? Thomas Durst describes how Robert rejoined him and their father Seymour after the breakfast and headed together towards the Durst organization. They walked through an office building on the way, as was Seymour's habit, and came to a revolving door.
So Seymour goes through the revolving door first, then I go into the revolving door, and from behind, like a sneak, he takes his full strength, and you can't think of him this way. He was strong in those days. He took his full strength, and he shoved the glass, and I went around and around, and I fell out, I fell out on the street, on my knees, and he's guffawing. It's the funniest thing he's ever seen in his entire life. An elderly gentleman had gotten into the revolving door after me, and he also ended up on the floor, but he was on the floor inside the building, and he's shouting, idiots, idiots, like I had something to do with this. Bob is guffawing, Seymour is his usual self, walking away. Who are these people? I don't know. And I'm listening to my brother laugh. He's just holding his gut. It is so funny.
As Lewin continues his questioning, a pall of expended adrenaline falls over the courtroom. Thomas Durst testifies for a bit longer and answers some questions on rebuttal by Mr. DeGaron. But his expression of pent-up anguish proves to be the first truly searing moment of this trial.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Jury Duty, The Trial of Robert Durst was created by Carrie Antholis. This episode was hosted and produced by Carrie Antholis and co-produced by Chris Terracone. The episode was written by Molly Miller, with contributions from Karen Ann Coburn, Sean Smith, and Chris Terracone. The episode was edited by Tristan Friedberg Rodman. Music was provided by Strike Audio. For more information about the Robert Durst trial, head over to crimestory.com. This concludes Season 1 of Jury Duty, The Trial of Robert Durst. Over the coming months, we will be sharing breaking news on any events that occur before next spring. We will also present a podcast special to commemorate the 20th anniversary of Susan Berman's death in December of this year. So be sure to subscribe to Jury Duty, The Trial of Robert Durst to receive the latest updates on the case on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts. And then in the spring of 2021, please join us for the second season of Jury Duty, The Trial of Robert Durst, as the prosecution resumes its case.
Thanks again for being with us. This has been a Crime Story Media and Acast presentation.